From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made at the Vatican on March 15th. The Vatican office that defines church teaching, essentially the rulemakers for the Catholic Church, called the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, was answering a question about same-sex marriage and unions. In recent years, many gay Catholic couples had asked the Vatican to bless their unions. The movement has been particularly strong in Germany. The Vatican answered that question, "Can you bless our union?" with a single word, negative. It was a formal responsum, and while it was only one word long, it carried a 1,000-word explanatory note. The note said that God's plan, inscribed in creation, is to only bless unions between one man and one woman. The Vatican wrote that same-sex unions cannot be marriages in the eyes of God, and therefore to bless them would be to give sacramental recognition to sexual relationships outside of marriage, which the Church regards as sinful. And then the conclusion, the Church does not and cannot bless sin, and therefore the Church does not and cannot bless same-sex unions. The news hit gay Catholics hard. For most of the past decade, they had watched Pope Francis offer signals that the Church would become more progressive in this area. Every time the Pope seemed to offer loving words for gay Catholics, however, the Vatican would release a statement reminding the world that a Pope's comments on an airplane or in a Sunday service are not the same as changing formal doctrine. And that's why gay Catholics have wondered, what if the Pope can change the doctrine? Does Francis want to? Does he have the power to do so? Technically, the Pope oversees the Vatican office that released the responsum. But the office noted that the Pope did not write this one. He had only signed off on its release. Either way, for Catholics who wanted to see the actual doctrine change, it did not. It was cast in firmer casings than perhaps ever before. Now, what did the Pope think about it? Vatican reporters have unnamed sources who claim the Pope was either blindsided by this, or was angry about it, or that he reluctantly signed off as a way to appease more conservative Catholics. Francis himself offered a kind of hint to his thinking this past Sunday during his weekly address to the faithful. He spoke of the need for Catholics to live out their faith and said, quote, "not with fleeting words, but through concrete, simple, and courageous examples, not with theoretical condemnations, but with gestures of love," end quote. Vatican reporters said that the Pope was referring to the responsum. But at what point can gay Catholics expect more than just veiled references of kindness instead of a change in church doctrine? In some ways, this Vatican statement carries language that is maybe a little softer than previous commentary on gay relationships. After all, go back to 1986. The 2021 responsum refers to same-sex couples as having some positive traits. In 1986, the same Vatican office released a statement declaring homosexuality, quote, "a more or less strong tendency ordered toward an intrinsic moral evil," end quote. But some Catholics feel the same kind of sting this time around. The New Yorker magazine notes that Michael O'Loughlin, the author of a forthcoming book about Catholics during the AIDS crisis, observed that the 1986 and the 2021 statements from the Vatican feel equivalent. And he added, quote, "it's a few words that feel as if they were chosen to wound. And based on the reaction by LGBT Catholics, they did," end quote. Our guests are here to talk about this. Let me welcome Stan J.R. Zerkowski. J.R. is the director of the Diocese of Lexington LGBT Ministry and the executive director of Fortunate Families. J.R., welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me today. I'm glad to be here.
A brief explanation, J.R., if you could, of what Fortunate Families is.
Sure. Fortunate Families is a national ministry that tries to build bridges of communication and dialogue between the church and the church's leaders, in other words, dioceses, schools, high schools, colleges, campus ministries, parishes, presbyterates. And we establish ministry sites, intentional welcoming ministry sites within the Catholic Church to minister with and to LGBTQ plus persons and their families and their friends.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. Thank you for making time for the program. And let me also welcome Brian Wilkinson, who is a tech professional who once considered pursuing the priesthood. Brian, welcome to the program. Thanks for making time for us.
Hi, Evan. Hi, JR. Happy to be here.
Well, it's nice to have both of you. And I'd like to just start by asking you if what the Vatican said in their responsum this month, how important that is to you. JR, can I start with you?
Well, I think it is sort of important and sort of not important at the same time. I mean, we have to realize, I think, first of all, that there are dubia that are probably myriad every day going through the Vatican. This one sort of caught the attention because of the nature of it. And so I say it's not that important because it's not a definitive teaching of the Church. It's not the Pope saying it. It's not a declaration. It's not an infallible teaching. It's part of the struggle. It's part of wrestling with the evolution of doctrine. So I see it as a dreadful statement as far as hurting the LGBTQ plus community. However, I also see it as a springboard for the wrestling to continue. And I think from it, the people of God will rise up. And the people of God have always been part of the magisterium of the Church, that is the teaching of the Church, and we will see the evolution of doctrine as much as this thing stings at the moment.
Okay. Brian, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think JR hit it on the head. For me, it was certainly more than an eye roll, for sure. I think it was, if this was something where, you know, we're 10 years ago, I would chalk it up to, oh, it's just Benedict being Benedict, and I'm sure it would have been loaded in more ecclesial language, but it was direct. Like you said, it was definitely left a sting, I think, that you can really remember. And I think, like JR said, it just hurts.
Brian, is it different because Francis has signaled for years a sort of a softening in the Church's stance on this? Does that make this harder to hear that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think coming at this from like the corporate world, the Vatican marketing department probably has some improvements on smooth transitions. Like you're saying, it's really a far cry from the "Who am I to judge?" I think that was back now in 2013, 2014.
Yep. Yeah, it certainly is, and that's why I noted and have noted on this program that this is a pope whose public language has almost always been sort of walked back by the Vatican, and this is probably the strongest example of that in official terms. Brian, can you tell us a little bit about your own personal story, you know, your own marriage, and how you kind of reconciled that with the Church?
Sure. So I grew up in Webster, New York, went to McQuaid Jesuit Catholic High School, and continued my education with the Jesuits at the University of Scranton. From many of my high school experiences and even a specific mentor that was a fantastic Jesuit, really felt a calling towards the Church, and I seriously pursued joining for a number of years. Ultimately, really decided to live a life as a proud gay man with my husband. We got married now about a year ago. And one of the things that I think stuck out when we were wedding planning, you know, I can remember I really wanted my mentor, again, Jesuit priest, to be in attendance. And I'd considered asking him if it would be okay to say a grace for us or bless the dinner. And ultimately, I just didn't want to bring forth anything that could be a future wedge issue. So we decided to leave this priest, again, a great mentor and for me a personal friend, unfortunately, out of the invite list.
Wow. And you've been a Catholic your entire life?
Yes, sir.
And is your husband a Catholic?
Yes, he is.
By the way, congratulations on your wedding.
Thank you.
And certainly best of luck to you. Have you had moments where you've asked yourself, how can I still be a Catholic given how the Church views me and my husband?
Yes, is the quick answer. You know, I think a lot of the work that's being done by the numerous groups, JR's group, I'm sure, included, you see that, and it really does help. I mean, you see people putting their heart and souls into just making sure people that are, you know, falling off the margins at this point have something to hold on to.
JR, can you tell me about how the work that you're doing really came together and what led you in that direction?
Sure. Well, the work that I began about 6 years ago here in the Diocese of Lexington was just a very grassroots response to the Pulse massacre. And I thought we needed to do something as a church. I've worked for the church my entire life as a director of music, as a director of outreach, as a director of development. And I woke up that morning, went to Mass, and there was not even a prayer said for the people that perished at Pulse. And that just really pushed me over the edge. And to make a long story very short, I began a local parish LGBT ministry to reach out and to memorialize those that died and to help the grieving LGBT community, because there was no outreach, no prayer. There was nothing for them at that moment. In the 5 years that have elapsed, we saw all kinds of people coming back to the church, people that had been away for 30 years. We saw grade school and high school young people that would cry because we put a rainbow banner in front of our church during Pride Month or during Respect Life Month in October. And all of these things gradually grew a community. And this past July, it became a diocesan ministry. All of these road marks and these stops along the road have indicated the beauty and the grace that the LGBTQ community brings to the church. In it, we have seen relationships. While we are not going to be changing a sacrament anytime soon, the relationships are incredibly life-giving that we see in our same-sex couples. The dedication to their children, the dedication to their church. As I hear the story of a couple that are in a quandary over whether or not to invite a priest to come and say a blessing at the meal, that breaks my heart. And these are the stories that we hear over and over and over again. As I travel the country, I hear these in every parish. And this particular document, going back to the Dubium that we're speaking about, it does acknowledge that same-sex couples and unions, are good. So it's sort of a we'll pat you on the back and kick you in the gut kind of a situation. And the sad part is that the kick to the gut causes people that have come back to the church, an incredible frustration. How do they explain to others why they're back? Why do they stay? And yet it's home. So I think the church really has to come to a reconciliation of, is this home for our LGBTQ+ person? And if so, can we look to our theologians who are working for a fuller Christian anthropology based in contemporary understandings of sexual orientation to help us with the evolution of doctrine, so that way we are really acknowledging and reverencing God's presence in our LGBTQ+ persons? My ministry, the ministry that began here in Lexington and that has moved into fortunate families and gone throughout the United States and beyond. I've dealt with people from Poland, with people from England, with people from Brazil in the past several days since this response came out. And they're all equally, horrified and equally hurt. And if we truly believe with Holy Week approaching that that Jesus is made flesh in every child of God, in every person, well, then we've got to wonder, what are we doing to the flesh of Jesus as Jesus comes to us and our LGBTQ+ siblings?
Yeah, and if I could ask Brian Wilkinson on that point then, Brian, when the responsum came out from the Vatican earlier this month, there was heavy condemnation from some very prominent gay Catholics. There was obviously the kind of debate that you would expect in the public discourse, but there were also predictions that this would be it for a number of gay Catholics who have waited so long, who have hoped for so long and needed to see some kind of a direction. It doesn't sound like that's the case for you and your husband, but
no.
But do you feel that this will lose the church some gay members? Do you think that this could be it for some?
That's hard to say, because I think there's a lot of great gay Catholics that have a ton of faith and are great models and examples in their community. So I think there's a lot of other issues that are are unfortunately turning people away. And, you know, this is one, I think, for folks like me. And I think it was a Father James Martin quote. You know, you just got to keep holding on.
So I want to listen to some remarks from Cardinal Dolan on his podcast on this. I want to make sure we got him. We got this, Rob? Because I want to contrast some of what Cardinal Dolan had to say with some of the other remarks from Catholic leaders around the world to this responsum. But Cardinal Dolan's remarks on the idea of supporting same-sex marriage, on his podcast he said that people who support same-sex marriage are like people who would give a bowl of sugar to a diabetic. And he addressed this controversy by mocking those who were upset by it. Let's listen.
Did you see the headlines? Vatican says no to gay marriages. Like it was it was some committee meeting report from yesterday. That goes back to the book of Genesis. I mean, that's pretty old, right? That's pretty traditional. Yeah. It's hardly news that the Holy See would reaffirm the ancient revelation of God that marriage is between a man and a woman. All right? That ain't news. But yet you think with the headlines that the Holy See had kind of gotten some old fat cardinals together. Why I was left out, I don't know. And who just sort of said, oh, we need to do a condemnation today. Let's condemn this one. Folks, that's been around for about 5,000 years since the book of Genesis, since God revealed his plan to us, which is the beauty and sacredness and the loving, life-giving nature of marriage, that his intention was only would occur between a man and a woman in a lifelong, loving, faithful union. That's as old as the hills. Why it is news. And wouldn't you think these people who are taking exception to it would simply say, well, there's nothing new here. We've been very aware that that the Catholic Church reaffirms the biblical teaching, as, by the way, the Orthodox Jews and Muslims and the evangelicals do. They've done that all the time. It would be very naive of us to think that Rome could change an immutable teaching revealed by God. I don't get it, but it's another, I don't know what's your take, it's another corollary that we need to change teaching, timeless teaching, to keep up with the chic cause du jour.
That is not a Rush Limbaugh wannabe. That is not a talk show host. That is a cardinal. That is Cardinal Dolan. And what I would say to the cardinal if he were on this program is part of the job of the leadership of any institution, but especially a church, is while teaching what you believe to be the faith and the values, some empathy and an effort to understand. That should be embarrassing to anybody who claims to be interested in why others might disagree. I cannot believe what I just heard from the cardinal there. He wasn't saying, look, you know, we love everyone and we want to, you know, we want to minister to everyone, but the church teaching has been consistent. We hope this doesn't hurt people, but we want them to understand. Instead, he's going, I don't get it. This has been the case for 5,000 years. Get over it. I mean, and then went on to say that's like giving a bowl of sugar to a diabetic if you support same-sex marriage. JR, what do you make of that when you hear that?
I'm mortified when I hear what I just heard. I had not heard that before, to be honest with you. And my jaw is dropped. I think it is probably the most unpastoral conversation that I've heard. It almost makes the dubium pale, because it makes the dubium sound almost nice compared to what this man had to say. And I also think that he missed the point. We weren't talking about marriage in this particular dubium. We're talking about blessing two people in a legal marriage, yes, perhaps, or a union, or just two same-sex people in a relationship. So first of all, he's sort of mixing things up. But second of all, I mean, I can't understand how he could say what he says and consider himself a pastor of souls. I think it's a further assault and heaping further indignity and heaping further hurt upon an already hurt community. You could say those very same things and do it in a gentle way and do it in a way that, I mean, this is not funny. So to be entertaining about it, I think, is just magnifying the ugliness of his words.
Yeah, and I will say, I mean, listeners, this program may remember in the last couple of years we've had a number of conversations and frankly probably need to revisit this soon with the direction of the Methodist Church, which has really been struggling with whether to essentially split in half worldwide over these issues. And there was a program in which we had gay Christians who go to church along with a pastor at a local church who does not support same-sex marriage, but is at least a kind, patient person to others in person. And, you know, I really wrestled with, do we bring this conversation together? How do we do that? Most of the time, I don't seek to leave voices out of conversations if you can find constructive ways to at least try to hear each other. But I can say that after hearing Cardinal Dolan there, I don't even know if I could comfortably welcome into this program. And he is one of the most recognized figures in Catholic leadership around the world. I could not believe what I heard there. I just couldn't believe. Brian, what did you think?
Yeah, again, for me as well, first time reacting to that clip. You know, I think in a way it does come across a little bit as spiteful, and you know, a lot the priests know. You know, when you're talking about gay Catholics, we're in the pews. You know, we are the choir. Like, we're there, and we want to serve and praise God and, you know, be respected, I think, in the way that you would expect anyone of the faithful or of any religion to be treated.
Could I just jump into what Brian just had to say? He said a word that I'd like to piggyback on. He said respected. Well, the Catechism is quite clear that homosexual people are to be treated with respect, compassion, and sensitivity. Now, that's the official teaching of the Church. So I wonder how this conversation, and I guess Cardinal Dolan could argue that he was being respectful by telling the truth, but respect, you know, also is a manner of speaking to someone. And we can speak hard truth to, you know, to our spouses, to our children, to our family members, to our coworkers, to anyone, let alone people that are doing it in the name of Jesus to one another in this thing that we call church, the body of Christ. How much more should we be doing that with a modicum of compassion and pastoral sensitivity? And that is the teaching of the Church. So I'm just not so sure when people speak, like I just heard that clip and I'm reacting to, obviously, I'm not sure how that squares with respect, compassion, and sensitivity toward LGBTQ persons.
Yeah, and we're not going to spend the rest of the hour on that. I mean, unfortunately, it doesn't merit the time. But I played it because this is a very powerful voice, and I feel like the responsum opens up the door for more of that. That is the point. When he called it a chic issue du jour, you talk about not wanting to actually care about and understand human beings. And that's a cardinal. Now, John in Brighton called in to say the cardinal's comments were absolutely appalling. He thought he was hearing the late Rush Limbaugh. John is a practicing Catholic. His gay brother is married to his partner of 27 years. And John's hoping that the guests will address the problem of polarization in the Catholic Church. So I'll kick this to our guests now, and then I'll take Jeremy's phone call. But Brian, you know, what would you say to John, who says, look, his brother is married to his partner of 27 years, and he's worried that the Catholic Church is becoming more polarized here?
Well, I think it's always fair to be worried, but, you know, looking at, you know, what can we do in the moment? And again, I think a key thing is being with people on the margins, really, really reaching out, especially in a pandemic where, you know, it's as hard as it is to have the full celebration of community. We don't want to do anything, I think, similar to the rhetoric from our Cardinal Dolan, that really, really is a painful push away.
Okay. JR, what would you say about polarization within the Church?
I realize and I live that polarization day after day. I sort of walk the tightrope between the poles. And that's an incredible balancing act. However, I think that we're called, you know, to be bridge builders. You know, one of the titles of the Pope is the Pontiff, the bridge builder, the guy who builds the bridges. I hope he's going to do that in this regard, but I think we're also called to do that. If we aid that polarization, then we're at fault too. So for people like me and the people in the ministries that I support and I begin, I always counsel them to find ways to build the bridges, to not be part of polarizing, to continue loving, to continue reaching out, to extend that respect, compassion, and sensitivity to even those that speak very differently than we do. Now, once my jaw would, you know, come back up from hearing that clip, I think that there'd have to be an opportunity for dialogue for people like the Cardinal, who speak flippantly, who heap hurt, and who aid the polarization. Actually, I think that kind of rhetoric aids polarization. So how do we change that? How do we move forward and build those bridges? Because polarization is not going to help anyone in the long run.
Let me get Jeremy in Rochester. Hi, Jeremy. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Evan. Thank you for taking my call. And sure. Thanks to your guests for fighting the good fight from the inside. I just wanted to share a story about my mom, who was Catholic all of her life, raised all of us Catholic, and in her late 60s, decided that she didn't like the way the church was treating kids, and she definitely didn't like the way that the church was treating her gay kid. So she decided to shop around, and she asked all of her friends to take them with her to their worship services, and she kind of practiced religious capitalism. And I don't understand why everybody is, in this day and age, is so brand loyal when there are amazing, incredibly welcoming congregations. Shout out to our Unitarian and Universalist friends. And I feel like if we just let capitalism control this and let the market speak and have people, even if you don't leave the Catholic Church permanently, shop around and take in some other congregations to widen you, and you might find a home, and you can bring some friends with you. And I would encourage some leaders in the local Catholic Church to do the same, to find out what other congregations are doing to accommodate their LGBTQ followers.
Jeremy, I mean, I appreciate the call, and I understand the sentiment. And let me just ask our guests how they feel about it. I mean, JR, how do you feel about that sentiment?
I agree with Jeremy 100% about looking at what other families of faith and faith communities are doing. Here, for example, in Lexington, I took my cues in the beginning from a dear friend of mine, Pastor Marcia, at the Bluegrass United Church of Christ. I watched what she was doing. She had a wonderful, she still does, a wonderful gospel-centered, Christ-like community that was just out there with everyone and helping and being the presence of Christ and welcoming everybody. There were so many Catholics that were LGBTQ that were joining Pastor Marcia's community that I had to look at her, and she knows it. I consider her one of my heroes. She taught me how to minister better to the LGBT community, how to reach out, how to be Christ to those people. So I say, yeah, let's look at people who are doing this already, who are doing it well, and then look to those examples and be inspired. I don't say we should walk away. I mean, we have to do what we have to do. A person has to do what they have to do to remain safe and to remain healthy and to remain one with God. I get it. But if we stay, let's find the most effective ways to build up the body of Christ effectively, and to do that especially with and for LGBTQ siblings.
What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, kind of picking up on Jeremy's thoughts, you know, the church for me really is the people, and I really haven't had the desire to shop around or look at other options. There are no other options for me. I don't mean that in a desolate way, but really as a believer and as a Catholic, and, you know, all my friends, my family are Catholic, there really doesn't feel like another option that makes sense other than kind of removing some of the spiritual elements that I really value for my life. I will say I was lucky enough about 11 years ago now to be a parishioner and a choir member at St. Francis Xavier Church in New York City, which is just a fantastic Catholic church that, you know, you get that that intentional and coordinated outreach. And it really is a community of you know, people celebrating together, but also marginalized in similar ways.
And Jeremy, if you're still there, let me just follow up real briefly and ask you, how do you feel about the efforts to change an institution from the inside, even when the person doing the changing, and in this case, we're talking about the Catholic Church, but there's many, many other examples inside religion, inside companies, et cetera. How do you feel about the idea that that sometimes it's an employee of a company, sometimes it's a parishioner, might not be comfortable with all the aspects of the overarching institution or organization or company, but they say, I'm not leaving. I'm going to try to change this from the inside. What do you think, Jeremy?
I admire your courage and your integrity. And I think that we definitely need people on the inside who are trying to change things structurally. But for your average parishioner, I feel like, as JR said, you have to go where you feel safest and where you feel the most supported. And I feel like that decision doesn't have to be as fraught. I think that if you just shop around casually, you don't have to leave the church permanently. But you won't know what you're missing until you've seen it.
Well, I always appreciate the insight from you, Jeremy. Thank you very much for the phone call. And Jeremy and JR have something in common. Both were moved in very deep ways by what happened at Pulse Nightclub in Orlando, the mass shooting there, and have worked in their own ways to change their communities and the world around them. And so we welcome all views. And after our only break, I'm going to bring in someone who has left the Catholic Church, but you know, sort of wrestled and has shared his thoughts on this program as a formerly gay Catholic. Not a formerly gay person, former Catholic. Greg Girard's going to join us in a moment, and we're going to talk about whether there's still a door open for some who have left. And I also want to read some of the remarks. You heard Cardinal Dolan. That's on one side, but I want to read some of the remarks from some other Catholic leaders that are very different that you ought to hear. Our guests on this program include Brian Wilkinson, who's a tech professional who had considered pursuing the priesthood. He is a gay Catholic who's chosen to stay within the church. And J.R. Zerkowski is the director of the Diocese of Lexington's LGBT ministry and the executive director of Fortunate Families. We're right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we preempt Connections, bringing to you NPR's coverage of President Biden's news conference. The president and his staff have made remarks in a number of ways over the last several months, but the president has not taken questions in a Q&A from journalists in quite some time, and it's a chance to hear that interaction. So you'll hear that live at 1 p.m. from NPR News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Bernie emails to say, Evan, I'm curious why you're not offering the other side of this issue. There are many loving pastoral Catholic leaders who could give reasons for the declaration of the faith regarding same-sex marriage. This is one-sided. Bernie, the Pope's not returning my calls. I'm hoping that will change. I'd take him any day and any time. We'd bump whatever we've got to put Pope Francis on this program. But in a more serious way, let me say that in a sense, this hour is one-sided. And I'm careful about that. As I mentioned earlier, I don't have patience, and you're hearing my bias on Cardinal Dolan's comments. I found those comments repugnant and frankly embarrassing for a leader who is supposed to be doing the work that he's doing. And I would say that to him if he came on this program and ask him to really think about mocking others who don't agree with him. I have to do better myself at mocking others who don't agree. So if you are a Catholic, Bernie, who doesn't support same-sex marriage or blessing same-sex couples, yes, my bias is to really struggle to understand that, given everything that we understand about what it means to be gay and what it means to love and what it means to be human. But I have tried on this program to bring that viewpoint with patience and respect to this program where appropriate. I mean, it's a delicate thing, but Pastor Rick Ledoux, who is the pastor of one of the churches in Webster that opposes same-sex marriage, has been on this program. And Pastor Rick Ledoux is a really lovely, nice person, and I respect him. So we'll see in the future, Bernie. I understand the criticism, but I wanted to take this space to give JR, to give Brian, and to give, frankly, gay Catholics a chance to explain how this decision and this commentary from the Vatican has hit them, because this is about what it means for them right now. That's why we're doing it this way. I appreciate the email. I want to bring in Gregory Girard, and Greg has been on this program. He is a local author, teaches writing. He has written about his own life growing up as a gay Catholic, going to private local schools, and wrestling with his own identity. And I just wanted to ask him a few things about what the last month has meant for not only gay Catholics, but former Catholics who are gay. Greg, welcome. Always nice to have you. How are you?
Hey, thanks, Evan. Always a pleasure.
I know it's been a while for you in the church, but so I have to just start by asking, I can't imagine you are surprised at what the Vatican put out, but I also don't want to assume, because I think there were some Catholics and former Catholics who were surprised given the direction that Francis seems to be taking the church. Were you surprised?
I was surprised based on the recent news, as you suggested, and I do, even though I have been 10 years removed from the Catholic Church, I still, you know, have strong ties, family and otherwise, to the Catholic Church. So I try to keep kind of my finger on the pulse, as it were, of what's going on and what's evolving there. One of my biggest concerns for me personally is gay youth. I went to McQuaid, also like Brian, although I was class of 84. So I think, Brian, I'm older than you are. But you would ask me why I left the church, and I'll kind of segue into that. That when I wrote the book about growing up gay and going to McQuaid and really, really struggling, because I was a really strong Catholic kid all the way up into my early 40s. And when I brought that book to McQuaid and said, hey, I would love to share this through your counseling center or have a session or to help young teens who are struggling with this issue, especially young gay men, that was, you know, what I identified with, to be able to cope or to recognize that there is a spot for you at the altar, that there is a spot for you in the church, there is a spot for you, and that God is love. And when McQuaid's I kind of got a similar answer to what you said. Well, we liked your book or read it. We think you're a nice author, but we really can't promote your book because of its content. And that kind of started my wheels turning and just evolved to a path where I no longer could support the Catholic Church. And I was a big changer from within type person. But when shortly after that, the Vatican also put out a statement when it was trying to address the molestation crisis within the church. And they framed it that, well, there are a lot of... They basically hung the gays out to dry, that they're, you know, that gay priests were the source of this molestation and that they were no longer going to allow gay people to become priests. And I was so offended by that, I really started taking a hard look at who I was, who I wanted to be, what my faith life wanted to be, and I ended up leaving the church.
There were some who have spent some of the last 7 or 8 years hoping that Pope Francis could not only prevent some on-the-fence Catholics from leaving the church, but also bring people back. Is there anything that could have brought you back, Greg?
I like what Brian mentioned about the church in New York City, and I was a member of Corpus Christi back here when Father Jim was in charge of it, and it was still affiliated with Catholics. So I honestly think that the outreach that's going to change the landscape here will be a split. I think there will become something of a liberal Catholic church and then a more conservative one. And I don't know whether that will be an official split and we have two more churches or whether that will just be a grassroots effort type thing.
Okay.
I still have a family member who thinks that she's a little suspicious of Pope Francis because he, you know, has been so liberal on such issues like gay marriage and relationships and supportive of that. And instead of embracing that, it's more like, oh, he's leading us down a dark path, or, you know, he's too liberal. And so I think there's already division within the church, surrounding Pope Francis.
Yeah. And so this issue is what has been splitting the Methodist Church worldwide. So you seem to be thinking, Greg, that beyond just seeing what we saw at Corpus and Spiritus Christi in Rochester, we could see a much wider split within the Catholic Church, it seems. That's what you think
that
could happen.
That would be my prediction, because that's what I would have voted for if I were still there when I was a faithful member. And the thing that disheartens me the most about what you played by the Cardinal Dolan, which was just repulsive, is that if I had, when I was back 13 years old and trying to struggle with this issue privately because I was too embarrassed and too ashamed to talk about it, and I would look up things like those statements from Cardinal Dolan, and I would look up things like what the Catherine the Doctrine for the Faith put out, and those statements would so dishearten me at an age when I really didn't have the maturity to sort through that. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a really tremendous burden for a teenager. A gay Catholic teen has a really hard road.
Well, I want to turn to JR and Brian on that point, and then we'll get back to some phone calls. JR, I suspect you will have a lot of appreciation for Gregory bringing up gay youth who are going to struggle with this moment. I mean, it's one thing for us as adults to talk about what it means for the Vatican to put out another statement like this, but for kids who are still finding themselves and asking themselves where they belong and what their future means and who will accept them and who will love them, I think Gregory is making an important point. So if you could, JR, can you talk a little bit about that? And do you see a possible split in the church more akin to what the Methodists have seen?
Youth, of course. I'll give you one example. I was at one high school where I did a listening session for LGBT students facilitating LGBT intentional ministry. There were 11 students that came to this particular listening session. Every one of them was on anti-anxiety medication. And the reasons we found out, because of what they were told by teachers in theology, that gay people are going to hell, that they were somehow or another intrinsically disordered, and what did that mean? And, I think that Greg brings up a very important point, that words matter, that statements matter, that our youth are looking these things up. And what are they feeling about themselves? And what is the church telling them about themselves and about the image of God in them? Or is there an image of God in them according to the church? I don't know sometimes with some of these statements exactly how the youth are taking it. So I think there's a real responsibility that the church has, and we all have, to young people to give them a proper self-respect. And words like this, church cannot bless sin or doesn't have the power to bless sin, and it gives license to reprehensible, abusive, toxic attitudes and actions toward LGBT persons. I mean, not only here in the United States, but I think we have to look even globally when somebody reads this dubium. I deal with a young man in Nigeria who's a gay young man and a Catholic, and he fears for his life. I've dealt with a few people in the past week from Poland. And there's gay-free zones now, and the church is not being helpful. So I just think all of this language, for our young people to be looking at it, is not promoting the culture of life that the church wants to promote. It's promoting a culture of death.
Could there be a split, JR? Could there be an actual split in the church broader than, a splinter church here and there like we see in Rochester?
Well, I think that's always a possibility, but I mean, I don't hang my hat on it. I don't think that's going to happen necessarily personally. I think what's going to happen is there's going to be, the buffet-style Catholicism where, like here in Lexington, you come to St. Paul Catholic Church where I'm working, and we have rainbow banners in front of the church, and we welcome all kinds of people in a large gay community, much like St. Francis Xavier or the church on Park Avenue, Ignatius Loyola, or St. Francis of Assisi in New York City, those kind of places that are notably communities that are open and affirming and accepting. I think that's what's going to be probably the way that this will pan out in the short run. I think in the long run, I think what we're watching is the evolution of doctrine. And I think the church is just going to have to figure out a way to pastorally accompany what the reality is and what science is telling us about the human person. And I just think we need to get with the program and figure it out. And in the meantime, I think that we have to be careful that we're not increasing this culture of death. And the culture of death is by telling people that they are not worthy, that they're not good, that they're not worthy of a blessing.
Brian, can you see a split in the church over this?
I don't think so. I think the church is the church with all its capital letters, and I do suspect you'll probably have many faith communities coming up with their own approach on messaging and outreach, as has already happened. And like I said, to be a part of a great church that does ministry specifically to gay youth and adult Catholics, and kind of finding their own meaning and being able to pray together around these specific issues, I think those communities will probably become more known and hopefully more abundant.
Well, we have just loaded up the lines with calls, and I'm just going to try to work through as many as I can quickly here. Hannah in Rochester. Go ahead, Hannah.
Hey, Evan. How are you?
Good.
Good. So there's so much going on here, but I really appreciate the people who are on today. And I just wanted to say, first of all, to Bernie, that, like, this should be just giving people from the LGBT community space, because they don't get that space, and they don't get that space and respect in the church. As I was raised a diehard Catholic, I'm having a really hard time leaving the church. But now that I have children, I can't bring them to church, because if one of them was born, gay, mm-hmm. or decides that they are transgender or anything, then how are they going to flourish in that, being told that there's something wrong with them? And I think that your speakers who are talking about this language, it was so offensive as a Catholic person to hear this, like, you're a sinner, but we love you. And that's such baloney, because God made each and every one of us in God's image. So how is this possible to have, we love you, but we don't love that really bad part of you? It wasn't long ago that, like, black people were not allowed in the church. Okay. People may say that's not true, but that was how it was. And I think that I look to gay and transgender Catholics and think, God bless you, because I can't go and accept communion when you're not supposed to be doing that. And, wow. We do have, like, James Martin, we have Brian Massengale, who are priests who are within the gay community, but I don't see it as being enough. I don't feel safe taking my children and saying, so-and-so can't feel safe to be who he or she is here. It's really hard.
Hannah, thank you for the phone call, and I know you're wrestling with this, and so, boy, I wish we had a second hour for this, but I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to back up Hannah's phone call with what the New Yorker noted, which is that some Catholic leadership has offered a very different take than Cardinal Dolan. Let me just read from the New Yorker here. Some prelates did register reservations about the document or sought to soften its language. Here's Cardinal Blaise Kupich from Chicago in a statement, quote, "The understandable reaction among many to this response will be disappointment. This should prompt us in the church and in the archdiocese to redouble our efforts to be creative and resilient in finding ways to welcome and encourage all LGBTQ people in our family of faith." Here's Archbishop Mark Coleridge of Brisbane, Australia. Quote, "It's one thing to say we can't bless same-sex unions. Well, let's then commit ourselves to grappling with the question of how else we might include same-sex couples." Here's Bishop Johann Bonny of Antwerp claiming that the reasoning in the document does not even reach the level of a high school document. And bishops in Germany saying that they must continue to tell LGBTQ youth that God is on your side. Down to our last minute or so, just briefly, Brian, does that help hearing that?
Yeah, it does. Especially coming from people like, I know you mentioned Father Martin, someone I held in such high esteem. I really personally do feel a lot of the outreach, and thank you all to the many callers too, who, extended your sympathy and personal affection.
And JR, about 30 seconds, what do you make of Hannah's call and some of these other remarks from Catholic leaders around the world?
Well, first of all, I think that the Catholic leaders' remarks prove my point a little bit earlier, that the church is wrestling with something. Mm-hmm. So I say to the LGBTQ people, Stay with us. Stay with us. We're wrestling. Let's wrestle this out together, because what I think is going to happen is the image of God in the LGBTQ person is going to emerge victorious. And I think the church needs to really fully heed its own denunciation of discrimination and embrace the full humanity of LGBT persons who are indeed blessed by God and who are going to remain blessed by God with or without a formal blessing. But I suspect they're going to get that formal blessing if they ask for it.
Well, and I just want to say again to our guest, thank you for the time. The hour flew by. And Greg Girard, not only thanks for making the time to call in, but thanks for reminding us to keep thinking about kids and how they're doing. Thank you, Greg. Always good to hear from you.
Sure. Thank you.
And J.R. Zerkowski, Director of the Diocese of Lexington LGBT Ministry and Executive Director of Fortunate Families. Thank you, J.R. I hope we can talk again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Brian Wilkinson, a tech professional. Continued success in your life, Brian. And again, best wishes on your recent wedding. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Evan.
We've got President Biden in a live news conference NPR coverage coming up at 1 p.m. And that's straight ahead.